suicide himself?
Yeah. You know, my mother, she would have, if she were sitting here, she would have spoke of how, like, the trauma of having her son being lost to the system. The system has claimed already two of my family members through depression, anxiety, and stress. But she's not here anymore either. And I'm realizing now that the depression that's transpired from Khalif to my mother is also to my family members, where senators and everyone asks for us to, you know, go up. And we got to push for reform. We got to push for this law and that law. They ask of us, the family members, to speak and to come out. Yet, when is it that they're going to realize these human families, these people like myself or my brother who's still suffering with depression, because losing our mother is the hardest thing we had to do. Now we're being asked to come up to Albany and force us to get out of our realm where we want to be mourning of our family, but then does not provide help or services that could inevitably stop the cycle of depression, like therapy or counseling or something like that. Where it stops this, because you've already created a cycle, and it's not going to stop until it consumes everyone that's in that path.
Khalif's.
Mark, I just want to ask you, we only have about 30 seconds. Most New Yorkers, the only time they ever see Rikers Island is when they're flying into LaGuardia Airport on a plane. What you're hoping they'll get out of your film?
Well, it's no longer out of sight, out of mind. It's, you know, we don't have to think about Guantanamo. We don't have to think about Abu Ghraib. I think what you just heard, that, you know, solitary, especially for adolescents, it's a form of torture. And we've been doing it right here. And it's time to wake up, and it's time to change who we are.
We want to thank you both for being with us. Akeem Browder, you're now with Campaign to Shut Down Rikers. You lost your brother, Khalif, to the system, as well as your mother. And I want to thank Mark Levin, director of the film Rikers. It airs on WNET 13 on November 15th. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Anthony B. and the Born Fire Band with Speaker Minds, MC Mike Crenshaw, and DJ King Toby on Friday, November 4th at the Hawthorne Theater in Portland. World traveler and Jamaica's reggae fireman Anthony B., known for very high energy performances with Portland hip-hop phenomenon Speaker Minds and MC Mike Crenshaw, plus KWVA Eugene's DJ King Toby, promises a fun night of uplifting and conscious hip-hop, reggae, and dancehall. Again, that's Anthony B. and the Born Fire Band with Speaker Minds, MC Mike Crenshaw, and DJ King Toby on Friday, November 4th at the Hawthorne Theater in Portland. More information for this 21 and over event can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Let Us Grow on Friday, November 4th at Mercy Corps in Portland. Let It Grow celebrates the work of bringing education and the experience of gardening to incarcerated youth and adults in Oregon's correctional facilities. This event features the premiere of the documentary Can You Dig This? And a panel discussion after the film. Again, that's Let Us Grow, a benefit for growing gardens, taking place Friday, November 4th at Mercy Corps, 45 Southwest Ankeny Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, accessories, and gifts with a focus on U.S.-made and certified fair trade natural fiber clothing since 1984. Gazelle is located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
The Halusa Nation. The human beings. The people. See, the spiritual in the natural, through sense and feeling. Everything is related. All the things of earth and in the sky have spirit. Everything is sacred. Confronted by the alien nation, the subjects and the citizens see the material religions through trauma and numb. Nothing is related. All the things of the earth and in the sky have energy to be exploited. Even themselves, mining their spirits into souls sold. Into nothing is sacred, not even their self. The Ally Nation, Alia Nation.
And good morning. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Paul Rowland. Be with you till 9 o'clock when Political Perspectives comes your way. Got two guests right now in the studio. We're expecting at least a third, maybe another one. We're going to be talking about mainly Standing Rock. Continue to talk about that. The two guests in the studio were just there until a week and a half ago. When were you there?
Well, T came back after I did, but I was there till about three weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
T, when did you come back?
I came back about a week ago.
And the voices you just heard were Jessica Rojas and Tiwani Sami, and they are Portland area folks. Tiwani is from Warm Springs, the Confederated Bands and Tribes of Warm Springs. Jessica, you grew up in Portland area?
I grew up in Portland. My father's side, I'm Mexican and Costa Rican. We're descended of the Daniel Mission tribes in the San Diego area. On my mother's side, we're German and French Canadian. My mom's a dual citizen.
I myself am of Italian and German and Danish extraction. I don't know if I've ever said that on the radio, but enough about that. actually, I probably have said my dad immigrated here from Italy. And I spent many years over there in the ancestral homeland, but that's another story for another day. So you guys were there, and our other guest, who I originally invited first, Delia Sanchez, should be showing up. She said she's running late. I know she's got at least one kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we all, I can't say I understand about that since I've never had kids, but it is understandable. So she'll be here shortly. And she was really on fire at the demonstration on Monday at the Army Corps of Engineers. I was really impressed mm-hmm. with her and just how everybody held themselves on Monday. There was a demonstration in solidarity with the No Dakota Access folks fighting there in North Dakota. And I was also impressed by the number of people showed up, by the strong Native American presence. There's at least 300 people there. It's somewhat unusual for a demonstration like that in Portland in a weekday, rainy midday.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really powerful event.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about that as we wait for Delia and talk about your experiences at Standing Rock. So obviously, Corps of Engineers. We all know about the Corps of Engineers here from their work in damming up the Columbia River, the Snake River, and many other rivers in the Pacific Northwest, all across the country, including the Lake Oahe, which is the contested area there on the Missouri River, which had originally flooded out the Sioux community that had lived there were several communities that had lived along the river. And which Donna Allard had explained here on an interview a few months ago when all this was getting started. So that was why it was at the Corps of Engineers, because the Corps is involved in the process. They had already granted the permit for putting the Dakota Access Pipeline under the Lake Oahe, Missouri River, and they're still in the process of deciding whether what to do about that. So let's just start talking about what it was like being there in North Dakota.
I see. While I was there, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about myself, and I learned a lot, you know, about America, you know what I'm saying? But one thing I can say about Standing Rock is the youth out there, just they're so impressive, you know, they're so strong. And from my understanding, they're the ones that got this started. They got this started with a run, you know, and brought awareness to what DAPL is trying to do. And then it grew from there, you know, and it was those youth, and they're the ones that are doing all the running, you know, and bringing everybody together, and the women. The women are over there too, and it's really strong on their behalf, you know.
So the run was from, they did one run right in North Dakota, I believe, and then they did one all the way to Washington, D.C. That was back in 6 months ago.
Yeah, and at the time, I believe there's at least four right now that are running to Standing Rock, and I know there's some coming from the Southwest. Those are the ones that I know for sure, as well as a young man, I believe, ran all the way to Standing Rock from Hopi. This was probably about a month ago. I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, that's a something that I don't know how old it is. It's probably obviously an ancient thing, but I know that it's been part of Native American protests or whatever efforts to stand up for your rights for a long time. In the Mount Graham struggle, I know that it became a big thing. So it seems like it seems to be part of a lot of different efforts around the country now.
It's about exercising culture. In northern Mexico, still to this day, there are tribes that run actively.
And the Tarahumara, it's really, yeah.
So I think what we're seeing in Standing Rock is different people from different areas bringing what's unique, what the unique gifts they have to offer. We see that with the Northwest tribes that came to do an action with their canoes. They brought the canoe journey, that way of life, to the Missouri River. You see young people coming and running from wherever, bringing what talents that they have, whether it's music, spoken word, poetry. They bring their uniqueness. We see the women that came down there and did the jingle dress action. You know, they came there and shared that way of life. And so people are bringing what they have to the table.
That was after the what happened. Things go so fast. Was it last Thursday?
Sometime last week.
The day after they came and
on the road, yeah,
stormed
I saw
their
that.
Camp up there.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. So we brought our canoe out. They sent a call out, and
so you're part of.
I'm part of the Warm Springs canoe family, yeah. Inchiwanapum canoe family, and it was the last thing I'd ever expected. But my canoe family showed up in Standing Rock. They raised the money and they showed up. We put our canoe in the Missouri River and we paddled it, and We've been on canoe journey here since 2009. Our canoe family, or 2010, excuse me, and
that, explain a little bit about the canoe journey. I'm sure people have probably heard about it, but not necessarily.
Canoe journey is it's a spiritual revolution on the water. It's a moving revolution. To me, it's a canoe/hand drum festival. You go there, you know, it's very humbling. You learn songs. You do a lot of drumming, you do a lot of singing, you know, and that's what it's all about, you know, and it's about the water. It's about the water, you know, because that's where it's all at. You know, that water is powerful, you know, and you're out there in a canoe and then you come back, you know, it takes you a while. I mean, you come back, you know, you come back in your canoe, your physical being, but it takes a while, you know, to bring yourself back, your spirit, you know, you just want to stay out there on that water. That's how beautiful and powerful it is.
So it started up in... the Puget Sound? Is
that, yeah, yeah, back, I believe it was, shoot, I don't even know the year, but I know that their first one was Paddle Seattle, and that kicked it off. I believe it was 91, perhaps, something like that. I guess we could Google that. But while I have the mic, I wanted to take a second. I know if anybody's listening right now, it's all them brothers and sisters that are locked down, and all them brothers and sisters that are over there in IMU right now. I want to tell you that what's happening out here is real with this water, and this water is sacred. We can't live without it. And I'd like to ask you to pray, because I know that in order for us to out here in the free world to sacrifice what it is that you guys do, we have to go to Sundance or places like that, you know. So I know that your prayers are real and are strong, you know, and I ask you to pray for our water and for our people at this time, because you are our Sundancers. What you are deprived of right now, we have to go a long way for that, you know. So I want you guys to know that your prayers are strong, you know. So please pray.
I do know that we do have people who listen from inside, and we have at least one program specially dedicated to that. I feel a little awkward, this being a call-in show, because I know I'm sure there's some very serious difficulties that they would have to actually call in and participate. That's unfortunate. We'd really like to hear their voices directly in real time on the air. But anyway, thanks
for
that.
But we know they're there. We know they're there. We know they're listening. Wanting them to know we're thinking of them and that we love them and we're praying for them.
And the number to call in is 503-231-8187 for those who are able to do so and join in this conversation. I'm speaking with Tuani Sami and Jessica Rojas. So what was it like to arrive there? I mean, it just must have been an incredible scene. I mean, we've been hearing so much about it, but it's just always good to get new perspectives, because this is, you know, I don't know, maybe it can get I don't know if it can start getting overwhelming in the telling, but it just seems like people are really struck by how unique and powerful and virtually unprecedented this is. And everybody just, I mean, you could tell it on Monday, just how everybody is feeling this moment, that there's just, everybody's feeling this is the time to really stand up.
Yeah, we were talking about canoe journey earlier, and that's kind of where we had to focus our summer. But after that was over, and we got a call from my cousin, he's the chairman of the Yakima tribe, Jode Gowdy, and he told us that he's getting ready to go to Standing Rock, and you know, if we want to go, we better get it together. So I got a hold of my dad and told him, you know, what Jode said, and he said, well, you know, we ain't got no money. So then just then, Jessica told me, said, oh yeah, she reminded me, said, well, you know, we got to go sing for a friend, you know, we committed to singing for a friend back in the early part of the year, and I forgot about it, and she reminded me, and I was like, oh yeah, okay. So we went and we did that, you know, and then she paid us for it, gave us a few dollars for it, and we used that money, and we headed to the Standing Rock, and we got there, and it was, you know, it's like the power of just being there, you know. It's my dad, you know, he suffers from cancer and stuff, and we gotta do these he has to do cancer treatments and stuff, and they really make him feel ugly, you know. But you know, while we were there, he didn't have to take no medication or anything like that, and we were there for almost a month, you know. And it's just, you know, it's like my old dad came back, you know what I'm saying. And that's the power of that camp, the power of that unity, the power when you drive underneath all of those flags, all those nations that come together like that, you know what I'm saying? It don't matter what flag, you know, you carry or you represent, because everybody there is one mind, you know, and everybody's there is for one cause, water, you know, and that's a natural right, you know. So it's so beautiful in itself, you know. Native people, you know, not just Native people, but there's people from everywhere, you know. You look on the internet and you see people sending support from Mongolia, New Zealand, you know, dude, the Mari Haka, you know, it's the most beautiful experience, you know. So we got to go there and walk our tribal flag in, me and my dad, And my cousin Miranda, you know, we went there and we walked the flag in, and it was a powerful experience for us, you know. And then the Canoe family came after that, you know what I'm saying? And just to be there and to be a part of that, you know, and to experience that with the youth, you know, and just share that with the people like that, you know, it's probably, you know, one of the most awesome experiences, you know. And we feel like you know, just to be there like that, you know, and to be a part of their cause, you know, it's like schooling and it's game, you know, because it don't matter where you come from. You know, you look at what's going on in the Grand Canyon, you know, what's going on the East Coast. They're fighting their pipelines, you know, and there's things going on everywhere, right here in the Columbia Gorge. You know, Nestle is trying to move in on us, you know, and
yeah, I heard you on that other radio station yesterday. Talking about that.
Yeah.
You got interviewed on OPB. That was great to hear you know, talking about that, because I think I saw even some posting on Facebook that you all were talking about that back there. And obviously people are, it must be a really powerful, just a coming together of different issues, people sharing information and really coming to understand what everybody's going through all around the country. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it's all the same battle. It's all water. It's all for water.
And I just want to say, you mentioned your dad, who I also know is Milton Sami. Quilt, people know him as Quilt Man, a longtime singer with John Trudell, who we actually heard. I forgot to mention that. That was his voice on this new album CD called, by A Tribe Called Red, The Great Seal of the Haluse Nation. And they're going to be in town on November 15th at the Wonder Ballroom. I meant to mention that right off the bat. That's who we heard, and that's who your dad is. And it's so great to hear that he really it was real medicine for him and a lot of people, apparently, being out there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. As you know, you come out of North Dakota there, and you make it about as far as Miles City. That's where all his ailments start coming back. Poor guy. Damn.
So I hope Delia, she is going to come, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. All the right. Traffic out there on the freeway is bad. It's really bad right now. Yeah, so you know, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not surprised that she's so late, because we were running really late. We left a little early.
So we're talking about the Jessica. Do you want to say something about being back there?
Well, some of the things that I did see that I think that are important to share is that you don't need necessarily to go there to support what's going on there. There are banks that are invested in this that are almost more powerful than our government. And they're holding our government hostage. They're holding the Army Corps of Engineers hostage. The Omaha office. They're the ones who are making decisions. Even though the Portland has Army Corps office has jurisdiction, the Omaha office is making decisions. So on November 12th, I want to say that there's a group in Omaha, Nebraska. If you want to join them, they have an action. And that weekend is also Veterans Day weekend, one of the biggest shopping days of the year. If you really want to stand in solidarity with Standing Rock, let those banks know how you feel. If you have a bank account with them, close your account. If you belong to an institution and you do business with these banks, close your account, send them a letter, and let them know.
Who are some of these banks?
Bank of America. We know that Citibank is one of the largest conveners. They have about 30% of the investment. Wells Fargo supposedly is still involved. 350.org and Yes Magazine have both published articles on this. So you can Google their work and research around the banks so you can target your investments correctly. But one of the things I did see over there that I feel that's important, just like T said, is that we've seen a lot of young people helping out. My niece and some other children who go to school at the Meeniwechone School, they were around scrubbing porta potties. If you really want to support this effort, send some money to that tribe, because that tribe, Standing Rock, is paying for porta potties. They have a casino, and they have a lot of people from out of town that can't afford rooms, but they're there in the lobby. So support this community. Help them be strong. Don't buy bottled water. Don't feed this beast. That's how we can help. And that's what I've seen over there, is people trying to figure out what their place is in the movement.
And Miniwichoni, that's a school there at the camp?
Yeah, it was located across the river, but it was, I believe it's no longer there. Some of my nieces and nephews were going to school there.
And what was I going to ask you? The bank. So yeah, I'm a little surprised. I haven't seen any around the country any actions targeted the banks as of yet. It seems
There have been. San Francisco had an action the other day, I believe. Was it? Can't remember which.
Friday, I think.
Yeah, there was a group that locked down.
Oh, really?
And you know, yeah, I feel like that's the best way. If you want to support this, you know. And you can't go to South Dakota. Hey, guess what? North Dakota, you can go to South Dakota because Citibank's headquarters are in South Dakota. All right? There's places to go. There are banks to go. Even you don't have to even lock down. You can go out there and pass out flyers and tell people to divest. Push the envelope at work, whatever institution you belong to. Say, hey, do we have an equity policy in line? Well, maybe our investments aren't equitable. Maybe they're disproportionately burdening certain communities. So everybody's all quick to jump on the equity ticket, but I want to see them put their money where their mouth is.
And question your tribal councils. Question them. Are they invested in oil and coal, especially Warm Springs and Grand Round? Question them, you know what I'm saying? Because that's supporting DAPL, you know, and we can't do that. We can't be that way, you know. So question your tribal councils.
I think we got some callers on the line, actually. If Jim is still there, go ahead. You're on the air. Oh, I guess I talked too long. Kay, are you up next? Hello?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. Okay. Hey, good morning. And I want to thank you, Paul, for having Tiwani and Jessica on the air. Tiwani, hey, it's Aunt Kay.
Hey! How you doing?
Thank you for your amazing post.
Thank you.
Because I'm trying to stay in prayer to support everybody. And, you know, I'm so worried and nervous and you know, it's so upsetting. So the healing that took place after Thursday, I really feel part of that. And so I'm trying to just, like, come out of that drama that is just so hard to watch and so hard to hear about. So please keep posting. Really appreciate that. I, too, have been, you know, kind of looking for my place besides prayer in terms of support. And I learned, you know, after I sent a donation about the different camp, I wanted to really support the Ocheti Sakowin camp. And I was actually going to get in touch with you about that. Since then, I saw that they have a website at ochetishakowin.org where you can donate for the elders. I'm wondering about a couple things. I'm wondering about where are the environmental groups, like Greenpeace, Friends of the Earth, Nature Conservancy? Why aren't they on the front lines? And also about your take on how non-natives there at camp who are looking for their place, I notice on the videos that a lot of times they're the ones that are really shouting out a lot of angry stuff, and I think that they can be creating a dangerous situation if that's the case by changing that energy and engaging that negative energy rather than listening to the elders, basically, and staying in prayer no matter what. And I wondered if that's an accurate perception that I got from watching. And then also the disturbing things about the fire being set, and thank heavens the wind was blowing the other way. And I mean, I just felt their exhaustion of, like, you know what, we got to sleep, and please, Creator, stop the fire. And, you know, luckily it did. The women, I'm so inspired by the women. I'm moved to tears. And seeing the young woman jingle dance on the bridge above the river for healing. That brings water, high water from my eyes. So the women are very powerful because we are so connected to the water, and Grandmother Moon like that. So the newest things about Red Fawn being accused of attempted murder and then that actually being a young man protecting his prayer stick in the photo, so kind of wondering about all that stuff. And I also, are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a lot of questions. Maybe you could.
I know. I have one other thing, and Tiwani and Jessica can just respond to this however they want. But as one who has been following this through social media, these are kind of the things that I think a lot of people might be wondering. And I'll just end with this one. I know the pipeline is very close to the river right now. And that's really worrisome and really urgent that, where's Obama gone? You know, he's on the comedy tour already, I guess. And it was kind of really caught my ear when Chairman Archambault said a couple times that everybody'd be happy if they just reroute. And I was like, what? Wait a minute. So I'm kind of wondering, that. And then just locally, how we can plug into supporting the elders in camp.
Okay.
And again, thank you. Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
And I called Red. Maybe there's going to be a tie-in, maybe some kind of drive, fundraising drive. So I'd like to know about that. Thank you, all my relations.
All right.
Love you, Auntie.
So, environmental groups and non-natives?
They're there. They're in abundance. There's not a shortage of white environmentalists there.
They're putting it down. Man, they're putting it down over there. They are.
And they're contextualizing things, too. You know, I think white environmentalism is really important because if they have the resources to be analyzing things, like, for example, I remember the Keystone debate that EcoTrust did a project where they researched, can we strengthen existing pipelines? Is that more cost effective than building new ones? So there's tons of white environmentalists there. They're great. They're allies. We need them. I think they're important. I think it's also important to kind of know everybody, whether you're native or non-native. Are you from Standing Rock? What do you do there? We leave that community behind with our results, with what we've done, our actions. So they will either benefit or be burdened by it. And if we bring things out there they don't need, you're dropping off your yard sale items that you don't want, well, do they want that either? What do you think, T?
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that myself. But, they call it the Dapple Mall. They have just this huge abundance of, looks like a reservation yard sale.
Clothes, baby clothes, a lot of, some good stuff too. I think what they need is wood. They need propane. They need warriors. They need support for their porta potties, and they need all eyes on them and what they're doing, and us being up the butts of our governments and these institutions that are fueling this fire.
And I think they need. There's a call out for yurts. Teepees.
Teepees, that's trailers.
Those are big items, but
fish houses.
Anybody have any
rocket stoves?
I know there's a bunch of. I googled actually a Northwest yurt manufacturers. There's a couple in the Portland area. I was gonna start calling them up and seeing if they can make donations. So then you'll need a truck to transport such a thing out there. But those are. Projects. I know there's a bunk bus that's being put together in Portland. I don't know where they're at with that. I think they're still trying to raise some money, I think. Because they are going to hunker down for the winter. The other thing they said was non-natives creating potential difficulties by expressing your aunt mentioned by acting out in ways that are not necessarily the most helpful. Did you see anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. The incident with the dogs, we went up there and we heard a lot of that. You know, me and my dad, and it had me thinking, you know, it just kind of had me thinking, like, you know, it's just like, you know, really, what side are you on? You know, what side are you on?
What do you mean the incident with the dogs?
You know, where the dogs came there and they, Dapple Security had the dogs. They brought some mercenaries or something, mm-hmm. whatever that trip was.
Private security.
Yeah, private security. Those guys, when they came that day, they snuck around. They, you know, the original line that they were supposed to take, they snuck around and came over the other side of the hill, and they came through, and some people caught them, you know, from our side, and they ran up there, and that's when all that happened. So me and my dad went up there, and, they had moved them back down the line, a couple miles down the line. And as we, you know, we were up there and we're kind of coming back with everybody, and you hear all these people, you know, just kind of being that way, you know, like antagonizing and telling everybody, you know, you guys are singing songs and shaking hands and dancing around and praying and stuff, you know, this is happening and everything. But in reality, when you look at it, that camp is full of kids and women. So why would you bring that attitude, you know? And especially, you know, coming from Phyllis Young, you know, she's from Standing Rock. She's an elder from Standing Rock. And she's the one who I listen to when I'm there. And she's the one who told us, her and Virgil taken alive, that both of them, Virgil taken alive when I got there, he was the spiritual advisor of the camp right there by the Long Lodge. They call it the Council Lodge. Look like a teepee longhouse. To our people, it's a teepee longhouse. To them, it's a council lodge. I'm sorry, but we don't need that. You know what I'm saying? And that's coming from them. You know, that's coming from the elders of Standing Rock. So we can't go there with that attitude, because there's too many innocent people there. And you know, I understand if you believe that there shouldn't be kids. You know what I'm saying? I understand if that's how you feel, but when you look at it, those are the ones that are holding down that line. They're holding down that line, because you look at things like Waco and Ruby Ridge, you know, there were kids there, and they were non-native, you know. So take that for example, you know what I'm saying, and think about that, you know, before you go out there and start trying to get gung-ho around and stuff, you know, because they don't need that. They need prayer. You know,
and so, not only that, but I just want to say, all those farmers in Iowa, all these people that are along the pipeline that are non-native, they're getting their lands taken away through eminent domain. Maybe they welcome that sort of radical vibe in their communities. I don't know, but I want to speak to something called NIMBY, not in my backyard, and YIMBY, yes, in my backyard. And I believe Kay asked a question about that, the rerouting of the pipeline. So I just want to mention that nobody wants it in their backyard. No community, and there was a community that was able to say no, and they rerouted it. I don't know. It's up to the people. Do they want this in anybody's backyard?
Well, Obama just is on the news this morning. He was actually talking about, finally broached the question of rerouting the pipeline. But I mean, you start thinking about that, and it's like, okay, all the devastation they've already caused by clearing all that land, digging it up for the pipeline. So now they're going to like move it and do that again. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of questions. And, you know, is it safe anywhere, crossing any river anywhere? I mean, but Dave Archambault, the tribal chairman, did mention, you know, on MSNBC, the possibility of rerouting. I don't, you know, whether that's a strategic question, you know, because, you know, well, it does force the contradictions. If you actually say, well, reroute it, then it's gonna cost the pipeline immense amounts of money to like redesign the route. You have to go through eminent domain all over again for that. So, you know, strategically, it's not necessarily a bad thing to suggest rerouting, but, you know, I think we all agree that it's not a good idea. So we do have more callers. This is a call-in show, 503-231-8187. Renee, I believe, is hopefully still patiently waiting. Are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes,
you're on
I'm
the
here. Oh, first of all, I wanted to say thank you so much to Kibu for continuing to update us about this issue. I try to listen to it every in the mornings when I'm coming to work. So I'm gonna keep this quick. I'm a teacher at Roosevelt High School, which is the most diverse high school in the state of Oregon. And I'm trying to figure out, as a teacher, how do I get my kids really knowledgeable about this issue? I have them in, you know, researching it on from several different angles, and I'm trying to figure out how do I keep this in the forefront of their minds about how they can get involved. I noticed earlier in the show you were talking about how this is really a youth-led movement, and I want them to kind of be inspired by that and understand that they have power as young people. Their voices are important, and so I'm looking for some advice on how to continue to keep my youth that I'm encountering knowledgeable and also involved in some way on this issue. And the other thing is, I'm wondering as if there is anyone who is one of the guests on the show, if they can come to Roosevelt to talk to my students about this.
Thank you, teacher, for calling in. We really appreciate that. I think the first things first is you could pull up a big a watershed map of the United States and look at that Missouri River watershed. This isn't a Native American issue. This is about one of the largest watersheds and drainage basins in our country, in our continent. So that is one way. Take them to the closest body of water that you have near their school and have them connect with that body of water. If they have a connection to our watersheds here, it'll be easier for them to connect to their watersheds there. And when I was out there at Standing Rock, one of the things, I wasn't on the front line at all. I spent time with children and with women, and I washed dishes and I boiled water, and I spent time with children. And I'll tell you, the kids, they'll light your heart on fire. If you invest in them, they're going to be the ones to carry this when we can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And we'd be more than happy, myself, Jessica Rojas, and my partner here, Tiwani Sami, Paul Rowland here at the station knows how to get a hold of us. We'd be more than happy to come and share this with your students. That's what we want.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, geography, history, you know, the history of relations with the Great Sioux Nation, the Fort Laramie treaties. I mean, God, this what a great place to bring it all together. As you said, geography. It's all right there. I mean, that the history of the United States, and I think bringing in people to talk about the Army Corps of Engineers relationship with indigenous peoples here in the Pacific Northwest are certainly awesome. I was you know, the first thing I heard when I got to the rally at the Army Corps of Engineers on Monday was Linda Mianus being interviewed by one of the TV stations, and they asked her, well, why are you here? Well, she says, because I'm from Celilo. It's like, you know, what more does there need to be said? The history, and I mean, of course, the relationship has evolved here with the Corps of Engineers. There's incredibly complex, you know, collaborative arrangements. You know, the whole treaty relationships are very different. But the bottom line is those dams were built and destroyed Native communities and are still there and continue to, you know, impact the fish and the cultures. And, you know, no real reparations have been made, you know, no real historical reckoning. You know, what the Corps of Engineers, I've got some articles here. There's a good thing. Talk about the history of the Corps of Engineers, how it developed. What it's done historically. I mean, the list goes on.
Well, you know, Teague, him being from the Columbia River, I know that he has a lot that he could share on this. But one thing I just want to say is that the Corps hasn't always been the best partner maybe in the past, but it's definitely a partner we need in the future, because one day these dams will need to come down. And who else better to help us than the people who built them?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there was a very there's a lot of anger at that demonstration on Monday. There's a lot of passion. There's a lot of powerful emotion. There's a lot of really powerful words, poetry, song, just a lot of really good sharing. And there was anger directed. You know, people did. I reported on the news yesterday about the event that there is a bunch of people, you know, got into the, you know, I felt a little bad for the security guard there at the time. She seemed pretty stressed out. But I thought it was an important, I felt like it seemed like an important statement to make to actually, you know, since people have been shut out of consultation regarding so many things regarding Native people that people felt like making the statement directly. But so talk about that, this complex relationship with these powerful institutions.
Well, the United States Army Corps of Engineers, you know, they built those dams, but Northwest tribes here have treaty rights that allow, that, you know, their treaty rights to have the right to fish means the right to have fish. And I mean, I'm just going to turn it over to my partner because this is their territory and he's paddled and fished on that river.
Oh, you're doing a pretty good job, actually.
Well, the Army Corps of Engineers, they regulate the flow of the Columbia River as it comes from its source in Canada. And we have this thing called the Columbia River Treaty between the United States and Canada. And for the first time ever since it was created, we have the ability to negotiate United States and Canada. So Canada holds water back every year and floods their communities. They don't have access to their fish in their communities so that we can leave our lights on, as I was told. So people in Portland can leave their lights on at night and not be flooded out. That's what they call, we call the downriver benefit, and we pay them half of the proceeds that we make from generating electricity. That's called the Canadian entitlement. But we need them one day to help take down these dams, and right now they're the ones who issued the permits. But I feel like, in my personal opinion, this is my personal opinion, that they might be being held hostage by one, an election. You know, nobody wants their budget to get canned when a new person comes into power. And we know that Trump has a direct investment in this pipeline. What we don't know for sure is Hillary's role in it. She's really quiet. I seen an article came out on Native News, but couldn't access it. Obama speaking on the pipeline today, but we couldn't access it. A lot of media has been, you know, kind of being stalled. So basically, I think the power is in the banks. We need to put our pressure on our banks. We need to put pressure on who we give our money to. That's how the everyday person can have power in a way that they may feel their voices lost when it comes to our government and the Army Corps. Just like you said, Paul, they're just people. They work there. They really can't probably do anything, but they're held hostage by these banks. What do you think, T?
Thank you. Well, you hit it right. You hit it right. That was good, babe.
So the Corps of Engineers, I don't know. I think it is something that is a kind of a delicate subject, you know, that I sense a hesitancy to, you know, to certainly to condemn the Corps, because, and it's certainly not my place to do that, since I'm not really, I'm a small stakeholder in this, and obviously the treaty tribes are major stakeholders. But I don't know. I think it's not necessarily a bad thing to call them out. You know, I don't think they've really taken full responsibility as an institution. What's that?
No, they haven't probably taken the greatest responsibility. But, you know, I just want to remind people, usually these wartime projects, these work projects happen when we're in an economic depression. That's when we see projects like this come about. The dams were built at a time when people were starving. And you got to remember this, because history will repeat itself. And when we're starving and people need to work and men need to work, that's when we start destroying the earth. And poor people and people of color, we're pitted in the most uncomfortable situation because we're so vulnerable. So we start doing stuff that even we know our grandparents and our parents and the people who came before us, they wouldn't appreciate that. They wouldn't support that. but we do it to feed our families. And I'm trying to do this so that people quit being so defensive about stuff and demonizing things. Like, what are you going to do when you're faced with the choice of either feeding your family or going against what you believe in? I know there's so many people out there that are stuck in that predicament, and you may feel ugly about yourself because you go to work today, but you're doing the best you can to support your family. So we just really want people to hold our government, our Army Corps, and these entities responsible to implement projects that look like the future we want to see. Algae, energy like algae, is the future. We need the Army Corps to build facilities that deliver renewable energy projects and not destroy our way of life. And when I say our way of life, I'm talking about all people's way of life: water, air, earth.
Hmm.
That's the big question: how to redirect the budget from military to non-military. And the Corps of Engineers is they're called upon to reconstruct the countries that we've devastated by bombing and invading, like Afghanistan and Iraq, and they're called upon to rebuild after Hurricane Katrina or whatever. And they're an interesting, they're kind of a fulcrum institution. So,
well, these guys called upon them before at the river. Why don't you tell them about when you guys were paddling in the big river, your canoe family, and you guys passed through the dams?
Oh, yeah. We paddled through there, and we went through the locks. We went through two different locks. We went through the locks of the John Day Dam and then the Dalles Dam. And we were escorted through by the chief, Wilbur Slokish. And it was a pretty awesome experience, because he told me, he said, he put his hand up, put his fist up, and he extended his middle finger, and he said, "I've never been able to do this to those dams, but today, on behalf of you guys, the Warm Springs Canoe family, I was able to do this." And it just made me feel pretty good, those kind of things, because that's our chief, but on that tip, I wanted to talk about a little bit about all that hatred and that racism that's going on over there, and that you feel that you can't go into that area and not feel it,
you're talking about North Dakota.
North Dakota, all the way across the board, you feel it, that's got to stop. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying that on behalf of all of us. We got to let that hatred go, and we got to, we got to stay positive, and we got to pray, because this issue is real. You know what I'm saying? And there are a lot of people involved in this, and that's our kids. You know what I mean? And we can't live without water. We can't.
This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Paul Rowland. You just heard Tiwani Isami, and you're also hearing Jessica Rojas. And we're talking more about Standing Rock and local issues involving the Army Corps of Engineers. We're talking about the demonstration that took place at the Corps of Engineers on Monday. Coming up at 9 here on KBOO on Political Perspectives, we'll hear from Green Party vice presidential candidate Ajamu Baraka. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia Headlines, Interviews, and Commentary. And at 10:15, it's the Best of Flashpoints. Dennis Bernstein hosts a free-wing discussion with Palestinian activist Ali Abunima, and we'll also catch up with AIM co-founder Bill Means. At 11 on the Bike Show, revisits the Portland Off-Road Cycling Master Plan with Michelle Kunick-North, project manager for the Portland Off-Road Cycling Master Plan for the City of Portland, and Tom Archer, board member and master trail builder for Gateway Green, Portland's first off-road cycling-focused park. And thank everybody who contributes to this station and listens to the station. If you are listening and haven't contributed, please do consider that. You can become a member by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. And I know Sunny's been waiting forever. I don't know if she's still on the line. If she is, go ahead. You're on the air now.
I am still here. Happy to be here. Thank you. What a lovely, lovely presentation. The first lady who called, she said some things that, thinking about those dancers up above the water, that's just a lovely vision for my heart. These well-spoken
young people, and what they have to say is so important, and also your efforts and the lovely teacher who called in. It's a lovely, lovely thing. Not surprising, really, associated with water, our friend. And I think when these young people bring up the importance of the elders' words about not going into conflict with this ugliness, this racism, this shut down heart, burning heart, hearts that are burning up syndrome that's associated with aggression and hostility and racism and stupidity, water is our powerful friend and is moving within all the people's hearts of the nation, our whole nation of people, at this time. And it's a very powerful, sacred thing. And what I saw yesterday with the news coverage of the people gathered to speak up, stand together, speak out for our friend, and those who are standing so well back there, is you can sense about this gathering of people at large, mostly, is that their transformation is happening. It is moving into the whole nation. We have many friends there, white, red, black, yellow, mixed races, everyone united with the water in their hearts. And when people turn towards these often futile acts of aggression against this very negative impacted power base, it doesn't go very far. We get on their wavelength and our hearts start to dry up and lose our own power. So I just want to say I'm impressed with the way everyone is standing, and I can feel the prayer around the people in Standing Rock that they are making, and that is above them and around them, and that it is moving upon the nation. Obama spoke this morning. He's trying to do something. He's speaking with great timidity because the situation is so volatile. These bad hearts would like any little opportunity to view it as a provocation to move on us as they have in the past, but we are enlarging with our friend water. She is in our hearts, he is in our hearts, and it will help us. That is what I have to say, and I just want to thank you Paul.
Thank you, Sunny.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And
I just want to mention, you know, to not take away from Standing Rock, but just remind everybody here in Oregon, all our listeners, we have this Jordan Cove pipeline. We have this Ruby pipeline that we've been facing here for quite some time.
What's the Ruby pipeline?
I don't know too much about it, but I know that it's going to go through like Eastern Oregon.
And it's not necessarily going to go through.
Okay, it's not. It's not going to go through. It's proposed.
Thank you.
To cut through, I believe, some of the like Klamath territory. And then the Jordan Cove one, I believe, down on the coast. I haven't been following them as much. I think Jordan Cove is a liquid natural gas, correct?
Yeah.
So there's pipelines here at home that we can fight against. And again, let's ask for a strengthened, localized energy economy that's ours.
We're winding down. Thank you all for coming in. This has been great. Hopefully we'll get Delia on sometime. She must have.
Oh, there she is.
She just walked in right now.
I want to say, though, Delia is a mom. She has several children, and wherever she goes and the work that she does, she brings her kids with her, and that's what's so important. Hopefully she'll grab the mic real quick. Hurry up, sis.
Got time for one thing.
Tell them what time it is, sis.
Hey, hi, everybody. I'm Delia Sanchez, just rolling in from the res this morning from Grand Round. And, got baby in arm with me. And, you know, I just wanted to say, you know, I think I feel so compelled to come today because, you know, just what's going on in the state of Indian country today is it's an urgent message. We need to get out there to everyone to stand up for yourself, stand up for the land, you know, stand up for the water. And that's the biggest thing I could tell everyone, you know, to get out there and make yourself vocal and let everyone know that, you know, what's going on with the indigenous people back in North Dakota, and not just North Dakota, all over here in Oregon, and with the water struggles, you know, just just please talk to your governors, talk to, you know, write letters, do whatever you can. I mean, the biggest thing at this point is, you know, get out there. When we're advertising these protests and these things, come, please come and support, show your support. And just let them know that you're for clean water. You need our future. The next seven generations need clean water. So, you know, I'm kind of struggling with the cold, so I'm just going to just let it go.
Get everybody water filters. You want to help communities have access? Build that access. Give us water filters. Help create water filters.
All right. That's got to be the last word. Thank you all so much for coming in. Sorry we didn't get a chance to talk to you more at length, Delia. Perhaps we'll have another opportunity. Thank you, Jessica, Tuni.
Mini Wichoni, water is life.
All water right. is life.
This is KBOO Radio, Paul Rowan hosting. Bye-bye.
On November 4th and November 18th, from 8 p.m. until 10, From the Grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary. We will focus on Mr. Gil Scott-Heron. Gil Scott-Heron established the attitude and stylistic vocabulary of socially conscious music in America. His music was powerful, his lyrics relevant, and his voice beautiful. We will also submit a musical goodbye and a love letter to President Barack Obama. So join us from the Grassroots, November 14th and November 18th from 8 to 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Dia de los Muertos PDX 2016, Wednesday, November 2nd, from noon to 11 p.m. at Audio Cinema in Portland. This annual celebration of the Day of the Dead honors our loved ones who have passed. There will be altars, music, face painting, food, drinks, and more. Again, that's Dia de los Muertos PDX 2016, Wednesday, November 2nd, from noon to 11 p.m.